Welcome to Women in WP,
a bi-monthly podcast about women who blog, design, develop, and more in the WordPress community.
Hi, welcome to Women in WP. Today's episode is sponsored by Ninja Forms, a premium form builder for WordPress. Create contact forms, order forms, donation forms, and more in literally minutes using pre-built templates from Ninja Forms. I'm Amy Masson.
And I'm Tracy Epps.
And our guest today is Bette Hannon, joining us from Bend, Oregon. Bette runs a web development agency that specializes in WordPress, implementations of accessibility, and Gravity Forms integrations. Welcome, Bette.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And we'd like to start off each episode asking our guest how they got started in WordPress. How did you get started?
So I had a first career in nonprofit management. And I, toward the end of that career, the last 5 years or so of that, I started doing a lot more with techie, geeky things, which has always been an inclination. And I was doing email newsletters and drag and drop websites and stuff like that. And right at the beginning of the 2008 financial crisis, actually really early on in that, my organization eliminated my position as a budget thing. And I kind of stumbled into, people would pay you to do just the techie geeky things. It was like a light bulb moment. And I started doing some of that. And then I was at a conference and I met a guy that I knew he was doing app development, but we were both involved in this nonprofit on the side too. And I was telling him what I was doing and he said, oh, you should be doing that in those websites in WordPress. I said, I don't even know what that is. And so we went home from that conference. And the next Monday, this is like 2008, remember, right? We got on no Zoom, nothing like that. We get on the phone and we both log into the back end of his WordPress website and he sort of shows me around. It was just this like light bulb moment. Oh my gosh, this would be amazing because, of course, in the drag and drop websites, the clients were always messing stuff up and it was a mess. So I started doing WordPress websites and just customizing some themes and got started doing something. I started learning HTML through Constant Contact, right? If you wanted to like control how things looked in the emails, you had to learn a little bit of HTML and I started doing that. So I started doing a little bit more coding and did a little more customizing. And for a long time, you know, I think of myself as really an implementer in the early years, but then really kind of learned a whole lot more over time and grew to become an agency now. And I love WordPress and I really love the WordPress community. That's the thing that really kind of sparked my interest too, you know, finding people online, but starting to go to WordCamps and you just see these people. It's like a big family reunion now. I've really been missing all the WordCamps during the pandemic.
Oh, yeah. So have I.
Same.
Yeah. And I've done some meetups and, you know, I've organized meetups and spoken at meetups. I mean, that's been kind of the blessing in disguise in the pandemic is that we've been able to bring in and participate in other meetups. So I've, you know, spoken at meetups all over the country and had people, you know, WordPress friends from all over come to speak at my meetup. And that's been really kind of cool. You get to bring some new people in. And
so. I love that.
I think there's so many people whose story, their WordPress story begins with, oh, well, people just needed this thing and nobody knew how to do it. So I figured it out. Like not even, oh, I have this skill set. It was like, oh, well, there's this opening. Figure out how to do it.
Yep. Somebody needed you to do something and you figured it out. Well, you know, there's an aspect of that continually in like running an agency or being a freelancer, right? You know how to do like, 75% of what this project requires. And you just sort of say, I'll figure out the other 25% along the way. And so.
Yeah, I need a t-shirt with that because that's feel like my life, you know, I'll figure out the other 25%.
Somehow. Or hire somebody to figure it out for me.
Exactly. Or hire somebody, you know, or bring somebody in. And that's the thing, you know, I was like looking over people's shoulders and I try to, with the folks that work in the agency, you know, I try to like help educate, you know, continually help them keep growing and learning new things. And I think sometimes they think it's a little weird when I say, oh, come watch me troubleshoot this. Right. Because for me, that's when I've really learned the most, not about us, like the nitty gritty details of that, but just how they approached the problem and sorted it out. And it helped me kind of learn new tools or new strategies. And so like just sometimes watching other people work is fascinating. So
I agree. Actually, I just have been finding recently, like just watching YouTube videos and people are like go through something. And I didn't realize, like, because it also part of me being the UX person, and that, you know, it was that struggle, especially when I'm doing user testing, where I'm like, have to watch someone use a product or something I make, and then not say anything. And, but it also, like, finding joy in that and finding it fascinating to see how people's brains work. I've learned so much. And you're right, like, that's, I think that's invaluable.
Our agency does a lot of work with accessibility, and it was like 2 years ago, I think, maybe three, we sent our lead developer, I made connection with the guy who is the trainer for the Oregon Federation for the Blind. And so if you go blind in the state of Oregon, they send you to NIC to get trained, and about how to use screen readers. He's the screen reader trainer.
Oh.
So we sent our dev to do screen reader training, and he's a person who's also blind, but she, that was her big takeaway was, oh my God, people who are actually dependent on screen readers use them totally differently than I assumed they would be using them. And so that was super, super helpful thing to do. She wrote up a little post about that on our site too, I think. But you know, it's just a really interesting thing that you can watch people do something and use a tool or use a something you've built and like, oh, I didn't really intend for you to do that.
So, yep.
Oh my gosh.
Yep.
That's
there's
brilliant.
A funny animated GIF where it shows some, you know, like someone using a cup, but like, you know, like having it like banging it against their head and, you know, not knowing to drink from the cup, you know, like that kind of thing. It's kind of, but it also is one of those things where when I was doing some testing and I was like, okay, now change the image on in this block. And the person that I was running through the test was a writer. So the little pencil icon that at the time was to change any of the, you know, like change the image, you know, for us, you know, I'm like, oh yeah, it's the edit icon. And she was like, oh, well, this is where I would write something. And I'm like, oh yeah. You're right. Like,
Yeah. Light bulb moments.
Exactly. Sure. Exactly. What is your, so you went from, you know, just kind of like figuring this out and then creating an agency, you know, as you do, what does your agency look like now?
As you do.
Yeah. So part of it was, so early on, this will sound like I'm not answering your question, but I'm going to get there. Early on, I used iThemes Builder because it gave me a way to really do some layouts for things without having to know a lot of PHP. I could do the HTML and CSS, but not that. And they offered at that time a lot of webinars for people around how to use the like Builder and some other things, but just how to do some things, how to install an SSL certificate with Cloudflare in the really early days, really practical things, but also a lot of stuff around business and running a business. And, you know, Nathan Ingram and some other folks were really just putting out these great webinars about doing, you know, how to run a business. And one of the things they talked about was, you know, at a certain point, if you grow, you should find other people to do the stuff that you don't like doing anymore, right? As you're growing as a developer, you'll get bored with stuff that you already know how to do really well or stuff that's just tedious. And so the thing that I was doing, we were doing at that time content. We would receive all the content from the clients, and we would put together posts on the website and an email newsletter every single week. And that was just driving me nuts. And so I hired somebody to do just that. And then, you know, it just sort of snowballs from there. It was like, oh, I think this person could also do that. And this person could also do this. And then next thing I know, I had a full-time employee. Oh, okay. Then it turned out that person that I hired originally to do that had really was had been in training, was really almost a junior dev, and quickly surpassed what I knew. So we had her doing more dev stuff. And so, and then we hired somebody else to do some of the stuff I didn't like. So we kind of grew. So now we are three of us full time, and then about a half dozen part-time contracted folks around the edges that do some specialty things. So when I need people to do like custom API stuff for Gravity Forms, Tracy, I have one person I call on a day.
I love it. I love it. It's amazing. And I I just need someone to like organize my life. Can I have just an assistant? That would be great.
Exactly.
I don't like doing that stuff.
There are ways to hire people to do that. It's called a VA. And you can you've got to, the key to doing it though, to getting it, is to start like systematizing things that people could do and having checklists and that. And I'm like the queen of checklists. And we have like, you know, we're in base camp now, and we have, you know, you have a template for a project, and we have like templates of inside template, you know, like things even nested. And so we have like, I don't know, probably like 75 different ones that are all the instructions.
Wow.
I'm just like,
because I need that's the by the bus first.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. You can't delegate until you have those kind of instructions out there. And then you can train people, but having them and making sure they're staying up to date, because it's the hit by the bus thing, right? If somebody gets hit by the bus, that's what we always say, which is not very uplifting.
I do this. I say the same thing too. I say it to my clients, and I'm like, if I get hit by a bus tomorrow, there are thousands of people that are qualified to do this because we're doing this standardized. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But you know, having the list means I can pull in the next person, and I can just walk them through that list in terms of training them. It's not all located in one person's head, right?
So. Yeah. How do you recommend getting that started for someone that wants to do that?
Just start writing it down. Just start documenting. And
let's do it.
What you need to realize, I think some people like, it's like the fear of never getting it done keeps you from even getting started. And you just have to realize that it's never going to be completely done. And you're always going to need to be revisiting it to update it, because you change stuff, right? We changed where we host from a cPanel based host to Cloudways, and that means a lot of stuff changed, right? So now I got to go back. I got to make sure all of those things are, you know, updated now about how you do this or how you get access to that.
So my question would be, because I absolutely want to have these systems documented, and I want to have, you know, a core place where everything is, where everybody can go find it. I have not been able to stop what, you know, the stuff that pays me long enough to put that in place.
Would you start? You have to make it a priority to get it there, right? And part of it for me is the motivation of, if I don't get it written down, then A, nobody else will be able to do it. And that's my big motivation, is by being able to know that for at least some of this stuff, somebody else is going to be able to do it, or I don't have to, it makes me faster. Even if it's something that I'm going to do, I don't have to try and remember it all. So, you know, we have a checklist for offboarding a client. We had a client who left this week, right? But where do I need to remember to go, like all the little places to remove them or take them out of this, or, you know, get rid of these logins or da 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 da. But if I had to remember all that stuff, it would just take me twice as long. So it makes you faster, and it makes it delegatable.
I think that's a really good point, because I, you know, you think about like, look at a designer's website, or, you know, web developer's website. If they're busy and they're good, their website's probably going to be bad because we don't make ourselves the priority.
We just did a new design.
Until we were like, okay, I'm going to consciously make this, and like, I need to prioritize that. But that's that same mentality is, like, okay, no, I need to make myself a client. And what you said about that, because I think I have all this stuff rambling and juggled through my brain. And if I did have some really nice lists like that, that would free up my mental capacity to, you know.
What's that like?
I don't know. I think I'm a little older than you, but I only have so many brain cells. And if they're all dedicated to remembering that kind of crap, I'm not going to really be able to be creative or do, you know, like be thoughtful or strategic, right? I don't have any more extra brain cells dedicated to that. So if I like just offboard lists, but But I'm kind of like that way for my personal life too. I'm a list maker. I just need to have lists and I have tasks and I'm checking things off. If I'm going to have to remember something, I write it down. It goes into my to-do list, right? So
do you have a particular to-do list software app that you like?
I use Toodledo primarily, which is, you know, pretty low, you know, like a simple. But what I like about it is that it integrates with everything. So I have it on my phone and I have it on my desktop and I have it on my, you know, have it on my, you know, laptop, wherever I need to be. Right. And so that's there. So I use that and it crosses over personal and business, but then for the business, we use Basecamp and it has to-dos there too. And what I really like about those is that, you know, somebody gets assigned the task and there's a date on it. And then we're looking at our, like, when things are due, right? And kind of managing that. And so I've trained, like, when we get a ticket that comes into our support system, but it needs me to deal with it because it's something not just content, right? Then they can assign it to me and put the to-do date on it. And then I, you know, it just pops up for me and I see it.
I love it.
I will put a link in the show notes.
Yeah, exactly. And it's one of those things where, I mean, like, I have tried different systems and sometimes, like, the most simple system is the best. But that it the motivation to, like, free up the remaining brain cell and a half that I have floating around because it's really overworked. It needs a nap right now. So, like, that is a really good mentality, you know, good mental motivation.
Yeah. The other thing is, you know, just a while back I did one of those, like, leadership style analysis things. And what it came back with was that my superpower is being an optimizer. I always am just lasered in on how could this be better?
Uh-huh. And so, this sounds like Amy.
And so, yeah. Optimizers unite. So we're gonna, you know, having that list out there is sort of like, then I'm looking at that and I'm like, you know, if we flipped the order of this and made this step come next, then it would save three, you know, whatever, some small amount of time, right?
Yeah, I'm always thinking about automation and ways I can automate things so that I don't have to manually do it. And when we switched over to using that, you know, an automation system for, like, onboarding, when we got a new client, I probably cut off 2 hours work time off of every new project because they take control and they have to fill out one gravity form and then, you know, X, Y, Z, all these dominoes fall after that.
I would love to see that. See, I haven't done very much of that. I have a small one, but it doesn't have a ton of optimizations in it yet, and then or automations in it yet. What I did do was I set up a gravity form, you know, gravity flow and how you can make these multi-steps. And then the best part of gravity flow is that the person who is, we're waiting on that person to make a, you know, fill out something, and then they get a nag email until they do it. So I set up a system we offer Termageddon, right, as an option for our clients for Termageddon privacy policies. And so I set up an intake form for me to go in, and I put in the client's name and their email address, and then it sends them a nag email until they come to my website and they put in either, I want to do a Termageddon policy, I need more information about privacy policies and Termageddon, or I'm going to sign this waiver and not have a privacy policy. But that automatically just happens. And that's been amazing. So I want to do more of those, Amy, and I want to see your form. And
speaking kind of automation, but I kind of put this because I just recently have kind of been trying to move all my sites over to, now I'm using like SpinUpWP and they have like, all of a sudden I was like, oh, I'm going to spin up a new site. And then I was like, there was a box and it says, you want to, you know, your spin up script. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. So I can use WP CLI and, like, install all of the plugins that I need to and download and, like, activate, like, my theme and do all these other things. So I put together, and actually I was using Formidable Pro and using and making myself a graphical selector of plugins and themes and options that spits out the WP CLI script that I can paste into SpinUpWP, and then it'd be like, boop.
That's really like, nice.
I love it.
That's brilliant. my thing that I have not yet, that's like on my to-do list for looking at was a great idea that I got. I think it was from Kyle Van Dusen in the admin bar community. Was like when we manage domain name registrations for a lot of our clients, but we have a good number of them that have their own domain names out there. We had a client last year their domain name expired because they didn't get the emails and all. So I thought, oh, this was a great idea. You could take the domain name, you can find the expiration date, and then you can, was like this lovely little email that just says, hey, we don't manage your domain name, but it's coming up for renewal. You might want to log in and make sure your credit card's there, make sure the emails are up to date, blah, blah, blah. And then what he said he did was he put it in an Airtable thing so that it went out as an automatic email X number of days before the due date. Well, I haven't done much with Airtable yet. So I was like, oh, that'd be a good, interesting. So the first step was getting all the information. So I have all the information. I just haven't started playing with Airtable yet, but that's one of my things that I want to try.
I like that.
Oh, I could set this automation up.
In Airtable?
Well, no, I use Zapier for my automations, but you know, you could make a sheet with the domain information and then it would go by the date in the date column and create the email 30 days before the date and send out the,
Zapier would be easier, huh? I mean, I don't know Airtable, but
I
it was
love
like,
it.
Do you like Airtable?
I like Airtable, but I like Zapier because I mean, I see the massive thing, system machine that Amy has set up, which is great. I think Zapier should like sponsor us because of Amy, honestly.
Yeah, I did have to upgrade. Like I started on the free plan, then I outgrew that one, and then I outgrew the next one, and I had that. So, you know, but I'm like into this plan that they don't even offer anymore. So I'm just kind of holding steady. I'm going to keep this plan. But
yeah.
I needed more zaps, more connections, more steps.
We had to go into the paid plan in Zapier because I connected. So we use Freshdesk for support ticketing.
Mm-hmm. We do too.
But we needed to manage some of that stuff internally in Basecamp. So we set it up. So every time there's a new ticket created in Freshdesk, we get a to-do on a special inbox list over in Basecamp, and then it can get assigned, right? The person who's going to take care of it can get assigned. So anyway, yeah. So then I had to get into the free list because that meant a lot of tickets. So
yeah. Yeah, we had to do in Zapier with Freshdesk where we would get a text if somebody checked that it was urgent. Because, you know, if something happened at 9 o'clock at night, somebody's site was down and I'm not checking my email.
I don't trust people and their urgency.
And that has been the case. That has been 99% of the time. It has not been urgent. But, you know, I usually can look at the text and be like, yeah, this isn't urgent. But at least I have something.
I had to fire a client once for that.
There are parts of me that have a really optimistic view of human nature. I tend to be a very optimistic person in many, many ways, but I have a kind of a dim view of human nature in some of these things, right? So when I do tutoring or work with people on like gravity forms, I'm always thinking, how can somebody mess this up? Because if they can mess it up, they will mess it up. Or how can they cheat this, right? So I'm kind of just always thinking in that way. But I have downtime monitor things that text me when sites go down.
Yeah.
Like the crucial clients. I mean, not mm-hmm. the little brochure sites that they'll let me know, but
most of them will come back in 2 minutes anyway.
The big clients, the whale clients, I have those on the SMS and I get a text when those sites go down. And that's the urgent thing I need to know. And it's actually way more impressive when I contact the client and I say, hey, I got the notice that your site went down, but we fixed it. And they didn't even notice yet. So.
Hey, Women in WP listeners, this is Tracy with a quick message from our sponsor, Ninja Forms. Wish you could build forms for WordPress without spending forever or recruiting help? You can. Ninja Forms is the WordPress form plugin that is both extremely flexible and easy to use. Create contact forms, order forms, donation forms, and more in literally minutes using pre-built templates. Easily customize with form logic, upload fields, multi-step pages, and more. Just drag and drop what you need, where you need it. Integrate with hundreds of services like MailChimp, Google Sheets, HubSpot, and more without needing to write a line of code. Get NinjaForms now at ninjaforms.com. And now, back to our show.
So we've already talked about NinjaForms, Formidable Forms, and Gravity Forms. So are there any other form builders we want to discuss?
I know, right?
Contact Form 7, anyone? Contact Form 7?
That was like the first contact form I used,
That's
I think.
Everybody's first contact form because it's free.
Contact Form 7? Yeah.
Yeah.
I pretty quickly went to Gravity Forms, though.
So I know you do a lot of work with Gravity Forms integrations. Tell us some of the cool Gravity Forms stuff you're doing.
Yeah. So I just did a webinar this week for GoWP, and we got a chance to kind of showcase some of the things that we do. So we do some fairly complex registration forms for clients. For example, if they do it, we're back when they were doing in-person events with, you know, multiple registration types and early regular and late pricing and all these different options for things and all of that controlled by conditional logic and different notifications and all that. We've done some, I described the Termageddon thing with Gravity Flow. We've done some Gravity Flow things. We've done some API integration. So like one of our clients is a small insurance company, and the platform that they use for underwriting things lets you send info over and get what's called an estimate. Estimates are different than quotes. Estimate of the policy, so we can do that. So we're sending info over to the platform via Gravity Forms and then pulling it back with just regular PHP to display a quote, an estimate on the insurance policy. We did a DEI reporting system for a national nonprofit where they're committed in all of their boards and committees to have, you know, diversity of gender and, you know, race and regions of the country and all of that. And so we created on a private, like internal website, facing website, created a system where like the head of a committee would log into the site. They only get to go to a landing page that, based on a custom user role. They get to, we're using Gravity View to display things. So the info about their committee is at the top, and they can edit that using front-end editing. And then they can add the members of their committee and all of that demographic info. It's using the polls fields from Gravity Forms. So then it displays these little bar graphs of how many men, how many women, how many non-binary are on your committee, and then all the different, you know, different, all of those different pieces. But because all of that is filtered just for that one committee on that page, but those forms are site-wide, then like the committee person, they can look at and they can see the diversity on that particular committee, but then they can look at organization-wide at the thing. So it's really pretty cool. I'm not doing justice to it there, but it is pretty cool. I mean, it becomes essentially a web app kind of thing that people are logging into and doing that. See, there's a lot of really cool things you can do with Gravity Forms. So
that's probably a lot more complicated than anything I've ever done. Gravity Forms. I'm just thinking of, like, you know, I have done a few like career, like job applications, and they get kind of long. And the thing I have is there's no like pagination.
Then you use the plugin called Bulk Edits, Bulk Actions for Gravity Forms, made by a company called Jet Sloth, which I love that company.
Oh, I do like Jet Sloth.
And you can, the plugin is Bulk Actions for Gravity Forms. And when you do that, you can, in the edit page, there's a Bulk Actions. When you open that tab in the form, then you don't see any of the detailed information about each field. You just see like little blocks for each field, and you can select them and move them up and down, and you can copy them from one form to another, preserving all of the, you know, settings and conditional logic and all of that. And
I knew you would have the answer for me.
Have you ever done anything with fillable PDFs? Do you know Travis Lipp's fillable PDFs?
No, but I have somebody today that literally asked me, how do I get a fillable PDF of the form that's on my website? So please give me the answer right now.
No, I can't produce the fillable PDF, but we've done it the other way. You typically have the fillable PDF already exists. So like we did them, and the example that I did in that webinar was like, we did a, for a daycare in California, there's like, I don't know, six or eight state mandated forms. You know, you have to fill out a health history and a blah, 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 blah on anytime you have a kid that goes to daycare, right? And so those are all available from the state of California as a fillable PDF. And so then you can create the gravity form that has all of those fields. So it's prettier and it's nicer and you can type. And then what you do is you then you have that fillable PDF. And then at the back end, it just kind of puts all of the data into the fillable PDF and then attaches it to a notification. So the PDF that you get out looks like somebody typed it all in.
But
the really cool thing that it does, that people don't really realize that plugin does, is you can take the fillable PDF. So like the pre-admission health history for the state of California daycares is like 3 pages long with like bajillions of fields in it, right? You could take that fillable PDF, you can upload it into the WordPress website with fillable PDFs, and it will rough out the gravity form with all of the needed fields. It'll like create it's not, and it's AI, right? So it's not 100%,
right?
But it's huge time saver. It's amazing. It's amazing. It's really a cool thing.
I feel like we're like the biggest geeks right now because we're all super excited about forms.
I know.
Tell me more about your fancy forms.
I know, but that's so amazing, you know. I keep trying to get more. I mean, that daycare hired us to do that right at the beginning of the pandemic. They needed to like do contactless stuff with their forms, right? They needed to not have the parents coming in to give forms because they were hoping to come back to actually have daycare again. But so that's been really fun doing those kind of things.
I also, not only for forms and all that stuff, but I know you also work on a lot of accessibility. And I also have been focusing on accessibility a lot too. What is your projects like? Do you do accessibility audits, or is it something that you include in all of your projects, etc.?
Yep, all of the above. All of the above.
Yeah.
So some of the best advice I got when we were starting it became known that we were starting to work on accessibility was, don't ever, ever put accessibility into a project proposal as something the client can opt out of to save money.
Yep.
So that it becomes what you do that you're not going to let the client throw the disabled people under the bus, right? And so so early on, that's a piece of what we do is we just do accessible development. Now, you can't always win those battles with clients, right? So you can sometimes you have to say, hey, you know, I know this thing that you got from your designer. Sometimes we work with people that have outside designers. That salmon color with the white text is not going to be accessible. And they just say, well, too bad. And so then we come back and we make them legally. So anytime we do a contract, we have a release from liability because accessibility is so rapidly changing. Anytime the client goes in there, it can go out of it can go out of compliance. We can't be responsible for that. So they've already released us from liability, but anytime they ask for something that's not that, you know, they push that back and want to do something that's not accessible, we come back with an additional release of liability that says, you acknowledge that we informed you that this and other things on your website may, because we just make an umbrella, may not meet accessibility compliance. You're releasing us from liability and you agree to pay all of our expenses in the event that you are sued, because you know, if this person gets sued, it'll be somewhere like New York across the country from me, and I'll have to travel there to do depositions, or I'll have to be, you know, there'll be expenses involved that they would have to pay all those expenses. And typically, that's enough to make people go, oh, maybe I should pay attention to this. It's a bigger deal than I thought, maybe. And so 9 times out of 10, they will come back and they'll go, we could change that color. And so but once in a while, we'll have somebody that will push it, and that's okay, and they sign off on it. But we don't do stuff that's not that way. So we do that from the very beginning. We do audits, and what we do is a sampling audit. So Accessibility in WordPress is partly driven by theme-based things that are the same from every page, like the menu. Is that accessible or not accessible? Typically, it's the same menu through the whole site. And then there's content-related things. Does the image have alt text on it and blah, blah, blah. We do sampling audits because it really doesn't take you that many, looking at that many pages to tell where most of the problems are in the website. So we'll ask, typically we're doing 10 URLs. We used to start and do like 25, and then we realized we aren't finding that many more problems doing that many more than we would if we just did 10. And so we help the client pick, you know, a variety of content, a variety of templates, a variety of, you know, authors sometimes, and get that. Typically we're doing 10. We do as little as one. But, you know, then the client has to extrapolate from that. Part of what sets our audits up, we're not just doing a, you know, automated thing. It's human testing with trained people who know what they're doing to look at everything. And then we also we give them a report. It's a 15 to 20 page report of everything we tested, what we found, what you need to do, what you need to fix. Here's a ballpark estimate. If you wanted us to do the developer-ish stuff on the remediate, we usually don't do the content remediation stuff. Usually clients want to do that themselves. It just gets costly to you have a, you know, a 10,000 post recipe blog that's got to have alt text on every photo. That's going to be a lot of cost to do that. You just do that on your own over time. But
yep.
We'll give you a ballpark estimate on that. But we don't necessarily do that. And then the big thing is we give an hour of consultation time. So then often we're not the, you know, developer of record or their regular developer. And so they just bring their regular developer, their development team or somebody there, not necessarily, but they could. And then we kind of can show them if they have questions about what, like, well, here's what the screen reader is supposed to do and here's what it does on your site, or here's why this is important. And once you show people some of that stuff, that makes a big difference, right? When you explain how it functions for people and how it's not working, then that lifts it, the conversation, away from legal compliance and into helping people, everybody, be able to use your website. So I think, you know, doing the human testing and giving some consultation time are a huge piece of, you know, just really important parts of what we do in an audit. And then we do some remediation. But
that's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm currently working as a contractor, like super, super part-time, but we'll be taking on a big project with jockey.com and their redevelopment of their site and doing a full audit. And it is a lot of work, but it is so needed. And like, what I love is that more and more companies are doing this, like,
yeah.
You know, they're looking for, like, we need a rolling kind of
yep.
check. Yep. Pulse check and make sure.
Yeah. And so there are some companies that are at higher risk. E-commerce, 74% of all of the ADA lawsuits in the US are around e-commerce sites. So, you know, any kind of e-commerce site, that's super important. And some of those sites are really going to do more, you know, they're just really going to have every page. They're going to really need to be paying attention to all of that and almost have somebody in-house or contracted regularly to do that. Other folks who have legal compliance. So we have, for example, one of our clients that's a big, that has legal compliance is a California water district, state of California water district. And so they have Section 508 compliance requirements and they just have us come in twice a year and we're doing kind of auditing on a kind of regular basis with them because they have a lot of content creators in there, and it's less about that focus of those audits is less about the theme related things and more about, are the content creators, you know, doing what they're supposed to be doing. So we've put in we've started using on that site the Equalized Digital Accessibility Checker plugin. There's a free level of the plugin, and then there's a paid level, and you can you put it in, and basically it runs on the content as you're going to save a page or you know, update a post. It'll run through, you know, all of those kind of things that AI does best, right? Are your H tags correct? Do you have alt text? You know, all of those. Do you have ambiguous link title, you know, link text, all this. And so it's great because it kind of reminds people what they should be doing. But
what are your favorite plugins and tools for using that? Because I mean, I've used IBM Checker, which I really like. I've used Wave Tool, but there's so many out there, and I found it's a lot of personal preference of what it returns. So,
yeah, I like Wave for doing just quick checks, like, and especially I have the Chrome extension.
I was just going to ask if you use the Chrome extension.
And primarily, I know our developer doesn't like that one as much. She really likes the Axe tools. And so
I struggle with those more.
I do too. Okay. But I like the Wave tool because it's fairly quick and simple to run. And it shows the client right away. It's easy for the client to understand, right? So I can be talking with them and then they contact me about something. They called me about their gravity forms, but now let me just run this through. Oh, you have a problem with your accessibility, right? So then I can show it to them. But more than that, you can, if you go to the Wave website and you run their website through the Wave tool, then you've got that URL and you can just take that URL and you can paste that in a, you know, you can give that URL to them so they can show it to somebody else and say, hey, we have, these are our problems, right? We have some issues here. So it's a really good thing. You can show them. And I like that on that tool, you can go to the color contrast issues and you can show them the color they've got and then move the little slider. See, you'd have to go this dark to get yourself into compliance, or you could go this light to, yeah. So.
All right. Sometimes I just don't agree with the color contrast when it tells me that it's not good. Sometimes I just...
Ratios do not lie.
Our eyes might, though.
So, but you know, if sometimes the part where you get like all those AI tools, right, they only find about 30% of the issues. And there are false positives and false negatives. So you, yeah, sometimes it can trigger something that's not really there. And typically for color contrast, the problem where it's kind of a false positive is when there's text on top of an image. And it's and it's really testing a place where the image is a little lighter or a little darker than you know, the rest of the background. And so often though, for text, when you're going to put text on top of an image, you could just put like an overlay, kind of a background around in the text box of it. And that solves that problem.
Yeah. I have a lot of different solutions for that. And I mean, and honestly, even now, you know, having some sort of cool, like, filter background, you know, like overlay is actually cool and trendy. And I'm like, look at that. And it's also really good for accessibility. So win-win.
Win-win-win-win. Yes.
I love a good overlay.
Yeah. I love a good overlay.
But not overlay plugins.
No.
So
this is crazy talk.
So somebody that I follow around in accessibility stuff in LinkedIn put that figure about 74% of the cases last year were e-commerce. And I'm like, where did that come from? I want to know where that number came from. And she said, oh, it was the UsableNet annual report. She said, I really like that because they pull in not just the circuit court cases, but they pull in the state level kinds of things, especially like California Unruh Act stuff too, you know. And so I was like, oh, that's really interesting. So I go off and I find that report. Among other things in the report, it says just about 10% of the ADA cases filed last year involved a site that was using an overlay plug, an accessibility widget or overlay plugin.
Oh, interesting.
And somebody said, oh, so those plugins protect you. And I'm like, no. That's an increasing number. We really think that it's because they're coming, the cases are, there's an increasing number of cases for sites that, you know, mostly e-commerce, but they're targeting sites now that are under 50 million in revenue, right? So it used to be that cases were mostly focusing on the big fish, right? The big big revenue sites. Now they're coming downstream because people like Jockey that Tracy's working with, right, they're taking care of these things in-house. They know they need to do this. They know that at that level of revenue, they just had, this is something they have to do, right? So they're kind of like moving downstream gradually, but those accessible, I have heard anecdotally that the accessibility overlay plugins, like if you're using Accessibility or UserWay or AudioEye, or that those are now being targeted because they know it's not fixing your site. And so those are the things that now they're just looking, they're scanning for sites that are using those, and that's part of targeting you for a lawsuit.
Mind
blown.
Well, I mean, it kind of makes sense if you think, I mean, they can only take care of, 30%, they're only going to find 30% or so of the errors. That kind of an overlay can't fix if your search box on your website is a keyboard trap. If you can keyboard mm-hmm. navigate into the search box, right, using the tab key on your keyboard, that's how you're moving around the website. But if you can tab into the search box, but you can't ever get out of it, it's called a keyboard trap. And if your search box is a keyboard trap, UserWay isn't going to fix that.
Well, it's like the Black Knight, you know, his arm's off, but you know, a Band-Aid really is, you know.
Yep.
Monty Python. I need to watch that film again.
Oh my goodness.
Your arm's off. No, it's not. What's that then? Just a flesh wound. Yes. That's what I think about. A flesh wound.
Yeah. I haven't seen that since I was in high school, but of course it, you know, yeah.
For everyone that hasn't seen Monty Python, he gets his arm ripped off and then it's like, oh, it's fine. Because that's what it feels like, just a flesh wound. That's what those overlay plugins do.
I swear I could sit and talk to you all day, but we are out of time. And now that we have talked about every kind of form, I do want to thank our sponsor, Ninja Forms, for sponsoring today's episode. And thank Bet for being here with us today. And before we go, if you can tell people where they can find you online.
Great. You can find me on Twitter at Bet Hannon. And our website is bhmbizsites, bhmbizsites.com.
All right. Ooh. Thanks for being with us.
You are welcome. This has been so much fun.
Thank you for listening. Interested in being on the show? Sign up on our website, womenandwp.com. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram, and join our Facebook group to have conversations with other women in WordPress.